Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I am your host, Vincent Trewell. Tonight, we're going to be talking about something a little different. Well, it's always a little different around here. But we're going to be talking about a branch of paranormal research that has not been active in recent years, and that kind of disappeared with the man who was a real pioneer in that field, Dr. Stephen Kaplan. And I'm referring to scientific research into vampires and the activities of the Vampire Research Center that Dr. Kaplan founded. Just to give a brief thumbnail sketch of Dr. Stephen Kaplan, he was born in 1940, obtained a bachelor's degree in sociology and a master's degree in education from the City College of New York, and a PhD in sociology from Pacific University in California. He was assisted by his wife and research partner, Roxanne, in founding the Vampire Research Center, and he unfortunately died at the age of 54 in 1995. And a lot of the movement for true research into vampirology mostly died with him. And that's, I think, a topic worth discussing for a moment. If you, like me, kind of developed and grew up with an interest in the paranormal based on pop culture, I first got into a lot of this stuff with In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy and all of the mostly pulp paperbacks of the 70s, and later moved on to Unsolved Mysteries and The X-Files and things like that. And that kind of led me in more serious directions, like the writings of John Keel and Jacques Vallée, and eventually into the wonderful, and I don't mean that in any quotes, the actually wonderful paranormal world that I inhabit today, then you might notice some trends. When I was growing up, a child in the 70s and a youth in the 80s, Bigfoot was a thing, was interesting, was something that was researched, and people were looking for Bigfoot. Likewise, UFOs, aliens, the whole extraterrestrial facet of the phenomena has been continuous from Whitley Strieber and Bud Hopkins to the present day. Likewise, contact with spirits, ghost hunting, that has only gotten larger over time, over the last couple of decades. And all three of those subjects, and you can throw in psychic activity, occult activity, other cryptids, black-eyed kids, men in black, all the different weird things that we like to read and watch and listen to and talk about have all kind of been there and only gotten deeper and had many more explanations. And a lot of the thinking these days is much more sophisticated and, frankly, a lot more interesting than it was, I would say, 30 years ago. Vampires are an exception. Vampires don't really have much of a following in the paranormal community. And just to, you know, draw a couple lines, I'm not referring to the people, and I mean no insult by this, I mean no disrespect at all. If that's your thing, it's your thing. But I'm not referring to the people who like to LARP or dress up as vampires and basically engage in role-playing to whatever degree they engage in it, or people who have a sexual interest in that type of thing. And hey, I'm not judging you. That's not my concern. I'm talking about real investigation of the possibility of real vampires. And Dr. Kaplan was in a pretty small group of people that were interested in pursuing such a thing, and did write books on this, did do real research and real investigation, and interviewed many, many people, and lent a real credibility to a topic that, without him, has not grown and progressed and gotten more sophisticated the way so many other things have. And honestly, I think that's really unfortunate. I think his work, which I'll go on to detail to some extent as best I can, obviously I can't have him as a guest. Between him and John Keel would be the two late great guests that I can ever have. So I think his work was absolutely fascinating. And as I get into this a little bit further, and some of you may already know about this, somehow scientifically investigating vampires isn't the thing he's most famous for. So we'll get there. But yes, I just think that it's unfortunate that in a world where there are numerous people in one form or another investigating Dogman, there's really not much of any serious investigation of and research of vampires that I've been able to uncover. So let's just go back kind of to the beginning and see what Dr. Kaplan was talking about. Dr. Kaplan published his first book, In Pursuit of Premature Gods and Contemporary Vampires, in 1976. And his opus on vampires, simply titled Vampires Are, in 1984. During the surrounding time, he conducted what he described as a vampire census, trying to gather a measurement of how many actual vampires existed in America. He took this extremely seriously, which put him in pretty much alone among other people. Not a lot of people took this seriously. He was frequently interviewed by very mainstream media, but always kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, you're not really serious, are you? But he was quite serious. He had made it his life's work. In 1980, Dr. Kaplan was interviewed by syndicated columnist Bob Green, and I'm quoting from the Wisconsin State Journal, October 5th, 1980, where Green talks with Kaplan and goes into some detail about his vampire census. Kaplan, then 40, had a short definition of a vampire. A vampire is a creature who must drink human blood to sustain himself. Dr. Kaplan believes there are at least 22 true vampires in North America, 8 of whom he says he has interviewed. However, he said there are a number of humans who appear to be vampires but aren't. And he includes kind of a typology. Psychological vampires who believe they're vampires, they live and act like vampires, they truly think they have vampire-like qualities of immortality, charisma, great sexuality and dominance. They may attempt to bite their victims in the neck or extract blood with a syringe needle or razor blade. but they do not, in fact, need blood to sustain themselves. There are a lot more, and I'm stop quote, there are a lot more people into that kind of lifestyle, and a lifestyle that can sometimes bleed over into serious psychological problems than there are any possible real actual vampires. But Kaplan had found 22 people that he, by 1980, that he believed were literal physical vampires. He went on to describe a couple of other regular humans doing strange things. Individuals who are turned on by the drinking of human blood and who do not really believe they're vampires. And blood cultists. People who drink blood at least 13 times a year. It can be the blood of cats and dogs and sheep, but sometimes they progress to human blood. And I quote, yeah. Dr. Kaplan said the Vampire Research Center uses the advice of 10 experts, including anthropologists, sociologists, psychiatrists, and hematologists. In conducting the census, they're looking for people who believe they have seen vampires, people who believe they've been attacked by vampires, people who believe they know vampires, people who believe they are vampires, and people who wish to become vampires, and people who wish to correspond with vampires. Once Dr. Kaplan has isolated a person he believes may be a vampire, he conducts a 116-question survey. To continue to quote from Dr. Kaplan's interview with Bob Green, as opposed to popular notions created by motion pictures, Dr. Kaplan said, vampires do not live forever, do not disintegrate in daylight, and do not sleep in coffins. He said that he realizes many people are skeptical about the existence of vampires, but insists that vampires do exist. There are not great numbers of vampires, he said, but there are vampires, male and female, who need to drink human blood every day. Dr. Kaplan used to have a telephone number at which people could call the Vampire Research Center, but had to have it disconnected when too many pranksters began interfering with what he considers to be his serious work. He was especially irritated after the 1979 movie Dracula, starring Frank Langella, was released, and many women, apparently attracted to Langella, called volunteering to donate their blood for vampires to drink. I have drank human blood under laboratory conditions, Dr. Kaplan said. It is red-hot, salty, sticky solution, and I have also slept in coffins. This was all part of my research. I am not a vampire. Although he is not interested in non-vampires who drink blood as far as his census is concerned, he thinks that the nation's police department should be aware of a large number of people who do, in some ways, behave like vampires. Whether someone kills you because they really need your blood, or as they simply think they need your blood, you're still DOA. That's a quote from Kaplan. Kaplan admitted he has interviewed a number of psychologically disturbed people who think they are vampires, but he said his research has led him to the 22 individuals he truly believes are vampires, including one attractive young female who appears to be in her 20s, but claims to be between 250 and 300 years old. It takes a special kind of person to pursue a bizarre and unusual field such as this one, Dr. Kaplan said. What puzzles me the most? That so many vampire sightings come from Wisconsin. Why Wisconsin? I always associated Wisconsin with cows and cheese, not vampires. End quote. So yes, that was one aspect of Dr. Kaplan's work. He took this quite seriously, sometimes at risk to his own physical safety, as can easily be imagined when you have a hotline to call up for people who think they're vampires. I am interested, fascinated by the idea that he found a couple dozen people that he thought really could be some sort of para-human, entity that looks like a person but exists on human blood. It would have been much easier, I would say, for him as a accredited PhD in sociology to just look at this as a psychosocial phenomena. And, hey, why do people think this? Why are they crazy, basically? But not get into suggesting that there's really something there. But he took it all the way and throughout his life believed that there was a small but existent number of people who are actually vampires. Right about the same time as the interview with Bob Green, Kaplan gave an interview with Kay Bartlett of the Associated Press, and the following comes from the Capital Times, October 15th, 1980, and just covers some of the same ground, but just emphasizes how serious Kaplan took this research and how much mockery accompanied it. He goes on to say, "I call myself a social scientist. I must have primary, secondary, and tertiary evidence. I'm not giving any National Enquirer interviews. I feel the subject is sensational enough." He has taught parapsychology. Can tell you that the first reference to a vampire is in the Book of Lilith. Has served as a technical advisor for radio, television, and off-Broadway's plays about vampires. With me, he says, vampirology is not a hobby, it's a life's pursuit. So yes, Kaplan seemed to 100% believe in what he was doing. And it was a pretty lonely field. Basically, it's him and his wife and a handful of volunteers working to prove that there's anything to this at all. But I'd really like to know, you know. I can obviously no way to confirm any of this. I did try reaching out to Roxanne Kaplan, but, you know, her husband has been deceased for 27 years, and I did not receive a response. I also reached out to some people on the internet who claim to have an interest in real vampirology, but it tends to be a rather insular world. So I'd just like to read one more excerpt from an interview with Dr. Kaplan. This is from the Washington Post. On, predictably, Halloween 1986, the Washington Post published an interview by Don Oldenburg with Dr. Kaplan and discussed his ongoing research and asked him point blank, are there actually vampires, real vampires, that is? The answer is yes, he replies. He is Stephen Kaplan, the world's foremost researcher of vampirology. And they go on to some of the information we've already discussed. For the last 16 years, he's been compiling the only vampire census ever to be taken. You are talking to a guy who has held up a cross and garlic to a vampire, says Kaplan, 46. Never mind that the ghoul could have cared less. Based on his research, Kaplan says garlic repulses vampires only if they eat it. Not so different from the rest of us. Except for the reason for their revulsion. By ingesting garlic, you change the chemical content of the blood, and he or she won't bite you, explains Kaplan. And the crucifix? Crosses have no effect. Vampires are non-denominational, non-sectarian creatures. He deadpans. Listen to Kaplan long enough, you might conclude the best defense is a bad punchline. Which, I'm stopping the quote now, kind of shows how this stuff frequently gets treated. But, you know, you get the Halloween interview, but at least you get to put at least he got to put some of the information out there and, you know, maybe draw some serious interest. He has founded the research center in Queens because he wanted to interview vampires who roughly spoke English, when, in his own words. When conducting interviews, he warned his subjects that I never give blood, not even at the office. But is he a serious researcher or a mad hoaxer? Claflin's voice turns spine-chillingly sober. I'm totally serious about this, he says apologetically. It's just that you go out into the field and investigate vampires, you must keep your sense of humor. Because you meet a lot of very strange people. Schizoids, psychopaths, vampiroids. How'd you like that lineup knocking on your door? And at some point, again, not quoting here, but at some point, Kaplan did have to change the location of the research center because so many disturbed people were showing up at all hours of the day and night, and they had to go to a much more secluded location. 6 years ago forced him, and I'm picking up the quote again, the most frightening of which 6 years ago forced him and his wife Roxanne to move, hide their address behind a P.O. box, and change their phone number. But Kaplan, who makes no pretensions of any blood ties with vampires himself, plays down the psycho element of his research. He believes it distracts from the serious scientific evidence he claims to have compiled. The numbers that he has come up with from his vampire census, Kaplan indicates that 150 to 200 actual vampires live in the United States and Canada today, and about 500 worldwide. Vampiroids, people who think they are vampires and may exhibit some characteristics, total about 10,000 to 20,000 in North America and 100,000 worldwide. That was the results of his research per 1986. The article also mentions that several years ago, Canadian chemist David Dolphin theorized that legendary blood-drinking vampires may have been victims of perforia, a rare blood disease that leaves victims dangerously sensitive to sunlight and often with disfigured fingers, faces, and gums, exposing prominent teeth. Dolphin suggested past porphyria victims may have tried to alleviate the symptoms by drinking blood. But physicians treating porphyria called the theory hogwash, arguing that they had seen no urge to drink blood and had found blood consumed orally of no therapeutic value. Kaplan dismisses the theory as corroborating the public's mistaken perception of vampires that has developed over legend and literature. The Bela Lugosi vampire. But if cloaked and stalking image is wrong, what are vampires like up close and personal? The Post goes on to ask. Well, they don't walk around with a big V on their chest, says Kaplan. They're a little different, and that's all. They could be a nice person. They could be the guy next door. So that's what I take from the Washington Post interview with Dr. Stephen Kaplan. He took vampirology very seriously, tried to apply the scientific method, tried to use academic means to document and really provide evidence. And unfortunately, his research was cut short all too soon. Change gears a little bit. It's quite a bit. It's fascinating to me that the major researcher into real-life vampires isn't most famous for that, but is in fact most famous for something completely different. And that was, interestingly enough, not as a parapsychologist or vampirologist or paranormal investigator, but rather as a skeptic in the Amityville horror situation, which led to a huge feud between Dr. Kaplan and his wife and Earl and Lorraine Warren and the Lutzes, who were promoting the events that they alleged happened at their home in Amityville as real. And the Warrens, who were all over that case doing their thing and promoting the things that happened or didn't happen or alleged to have happened in Amityville as demons, demonic activity, and trying to put their usual traditional Catholic spin on it. And Dr. Kaplan and his wife got deeply involved in investigating the Amityville horror from a skeptical view, not a debunking view, but because, you know, Kaplan clearly believed that many paranormal things are possible, that, you know, he also researched ghosts and poltergeist activity, and he was not a blind debunker who just goes in to, you know, explain away strange phenomena. But he was also not buying into the Warren's train, and he frankly exposed the Lutzes as having hoaxed a lot of the stuff that happened there, and in fact was honored, ironically, by people who probably would not have done much to support his vampire research for exposing a fraud. And that, if you start looking up Stephen Kaplan, that's the first thing that comes up, was that he brought out a lot of inconsistencies and, you know, cast a lot of doubt legitimately on the Amityville horror, which, to the best of my understanding, and I'm certainly willing to be corrected, but to the best of my understanding, has been admitted by the Lutzes as being, or at least some people in the Lutz family, let me divide that, as being a hoax, as being just a money-making venture when they were going through a hard financial time and had lost their house. And the Warrens, other people, particularly Adam Sane and Serfiel Stevenson from Conspiranormal, have really done the work on kind of exposing what the Warrens were about. I don't, you know, want to really go into that in this episode, because I'm here for the vampires, you know. But that is the most famous case of Dr. Kaplan's career, was not finding something paranormal, but exposing a hoax that was not paranormal. So I find that fascinating. One other thing that came up in the doing the research for this episode was that Dr. Kaplan was a professional school teacher. You know, being a vampire researcher probably doesn't pay the bills all that great. And so he was, you know, he was a school teacher. He taught in the Suffolk County School District on Long Island, New York, where, and I'm not saying there's anything more than coincidence here, the band Blue Oyster Cult was founded. I don't know whether Dr. Kaplan, as a teacher, interacted with any of the founding members of that musical group, which had a lot of material referencing vampires. But it certainly is an interesting note that people have looked into and seen that perhaps there was some connection. I'm not saying there was, but I'm certainly not denying it. It just comes up as a very odd coincidence that, and I don't claim to be any kind of Blue Oyster Cult expert, you know, maybe Steven Snyder could tell me whether that's, there's anything to this or not, but it was a small world where Dr. Kaplan's teaching as a school teacher, scientifically studying vampires, and some founding members of Blue Oyster Cult are writing music about vampires. So make of it what you will. One other thing that I found fascinating doing the research for this was that the very possible inspiration for the fictional character of Dracula came not from Vlad the Impaler, the king in Eastern Europe hundreds of years ago, but rather from Walt Whitman, the American poet, who was a very close friend of Bram Stoker, and who people have gone to great lengths to demonstrate has in the book, not the later movies, but in the actual book written by Bram Stoker, has a lot of the qualities that Dracula is portrayed as having. That's a whole different rabbit hole that I'm not going to climb down tonight, but it's certainly worth somebody looking into. All of this I've found fascinating. I really wish that the field of scientific vampirology would have continued or will pick up at some point in the future and pick up where Dr. Kaplan left off and see if, you know, are there a small number of people who live to great ages by subsisting on human blood? I know how that sounds, but I still think that there's room for study of that phenomena in the paranormal world, and that, frankly, I wish somebody would pick that torch up and run with it. It's probably not going to be me. It just, might not be a good fit. In any event, thank you for listening. This has been The Weird Part. I'm Vincent Trewell. Good night.